You're listening to a 95BFM podcast.
Wonderful, majestic world around us. It's time for Dear Science. Thanks to MOTAT, the museum inspiring the innovators of tomorrow.
Kia ora, Dr. Alan Blackman. How's it going?
Hey, Nicholas. Hey, Sophia.
Hi.
That backing music was loud. Oh, my goodness.
Yeah.
Sort of, yeah.
I was like, Sophia's a bit quiet here, and I touched the wrong one by accident.
Sorry, I don't have, you know, just speaking into the void.
Just speaking into the void, yeah, fair enough.
Speaking of which.
Yes.
We're going to talk some science.
Let's talk some science. I'm excited for today's.
Why not? Yes, indeed. Yeah. So big news about deafness.
Yes.
Huge news. So so just this week, it was announced by a drug company in the States, Eli Lilly, that there was an 11-year-old boy from Morocco who was undergoing treatment for his deafness. And he can now hear.
That is amazing.
And that's pretty incredible. And it's not through sort of cochlear implants or anything like that, all of those sort of fancy stuff that you've got to do at the moment, which is basically the only treatment for deafness at the moment, to my understanding. And there's also three deaf children in China who are sort of being treated the same way, and apparently they can now sort of verbally communicate without having to use their cochlear implants, so they are also being able to hear.
Incredible.
And this is amazing. And that latter story was reported in The Lancet this week. So this is big stuff, and I imagine there's probably a lot of deaf people around the world who are reading this and thinking, wow, this sounds amazing. Could it work for me? What are they doing? What is this technique? And it's good old gene therapy.
Yeah, good old gene therapy.
Good old gene therapy.
Yeah.
And, you know, to think that, I don't know, when was it? About 70-odd years ago, we didn't know what the structure of DNA looked like. We didn't know that it was sort of the genetic material that sort of basically shaped who you ended up being.
Mm.
And, you know, the whole idea of genes and everything like that, you know, we didn't know that less than a century ago. But now the advances that they're making are just, you know, mind-blowing, truly, truly mind-blowing. So what is happening here is that now this is not applying to sort of every deaf person in the world, because deafness has a few causes, so...
Mm.
But there's around about 200,000 people in the world who could potentially be helped by this particular type of gene therapy, because they are lacking a particular gene that is crucial to hearing, or they've got sort of a flawed copy of the gene, let's say. So it's not like it's absent or anything like that, but it's just not right.
Hmm.
So what they are doing is that they're using viruses. And, right, so if you're going to use gene therapy, somehow you've got to get a gene into a cell. Now, a gene is just basically a long sort of strand of DNA type sort of stuff,
yes.
Okay? And you've got to place it in a cell somehow. Now, cells have evolved so that it's really bloody difficult to get inside them, because cells only want the things that they need to get in and out of the cell. So we've got this big thing called the cell wall, et cetera, et cetera, that is very, very difficult to get through. But one thing that can actually sort of get into cells are viruses.
Interesting.
So what they are doing with this is that they are taking a benign virus, and they're basically loading it up with a gene called OTOF. Okay.
So it's like a virus Trojan horse.
Yeah, exactly. That's exactly what it is. Yes, a Trojan. Yes, yeah. And so they load it up with that gene, and then they put the virus into the inner ear, because they want to get it to these hair cells. So the way that we work is all to do with these tiny little sort of hair-like sort of things in your inner ear, essentially. And it's those vibrations that get converted to sort of electrical signals, and they release neurotransmitters, and then that sends a signal to the brain.
Can I just ask?
It's going to be a toughie, isn't it?
How are they putting a virus into the air? Is that through injection?
Yeah, apparently just injection.
Okay.
Yeah. Yep. So, and they put that in there. So these little hair cells are not functioning correctly without that particular gene, because that gene encodes for a particular protein. It's the protein that's the important thing here, okay? So the gene is basically giving instructions, make this protein that's going to help us here. And so obviously lacking that, that protein's not made, and so the whole hearing process sort of falls down. But now they've figured out, yep, this is the way that we do it. So this gene encodes for a particular protein, and that's called otoferlin, O-T-O-F, otoferlin, so O-T-O-F encodes for that. And that basically sort of is involved with the relaying of the sounds, the conversion of the sounds into electrical stimuli, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And then we can hear. So basically it's as simple as that. Now conceptually it's very, it is very, very simple. You've got something that you're lacking. Okay. So we know that you've got a bad copy of this particular gene. You want the right one. So heck, let's just put it in there. You know, should work a charm, but it's sort of, you know, the actual the doing of that that's going to be the tricky bit. And they really seem to be getting this like right now. So it all seems to be happening like right now. So this Moroccan kid, these Chinese kids,
it's amazing.
And apparently in February the 3rd there's going to be more announcements as well. So
do you know how long they've been trying this out for?
No, not the foggiest. But in terms of a time frame of treatment, apparently this Moroccan kid, 1 week after he was treated, he could hear certain frequencies as well as anybody else could.
That is amazing.
So, you know, that's amazing. But the thing that gets me, and I did not, so much I don't know, we're going to talk about that later. But so this Moroccan kid, so he's been profoundly deaf since birth. So he can now hear, but he still has to communicate in sign language, because apparently after 5 years of age, the brain can't sort of teach itself to speak.
That is uncanny, which
I absolutely never realized.
That is uncanny. You know what we need? We need a button that we press whenever there's like a Nobel Watch. Nobel Watch. I feel like we're going to be talking about this one a little bit later down the line.
So this child would be able to learn different language, different sign languages, but not different phonetic.
Not being
languages.
Able to speak, yeah. Yes, we know so much, but by God, there's still a hell of a lot that we don't know. And but you know, this is fabulous, fabulous news. And you know, hopefully the mainstream media will pick this all up and, you know, just point out what a remarkable thing it is. And you know, some people don't like the idea of messing around with your genetics and genes and stuff like that. And I think this is sort of an argument against that. You know, this is going to improve the quality of lots of people's lives. So that surely can only be a good thing.
That's a beautiful thing. Thank you, science. Dear science. What do you have up for us next time?
I was just saying that there's so much that I don't know.
Yeah.
There is. And to me, I think my point of view anyway is that the more you know, the more you realize that you don't know.
Dunning-Kruger effect?
The Dunning-Kruger effect, indeed. Okay. And so the Dunning-Kruger effect is basically that people who don't have skills are unaware of the fact that they don't have skills.
100%. You know? So
And that's been known for, oh gosh, a few decades now, I think. That's you know. So a bunch of Portuguese researchers sort of were thinking of taking this one step further and trying to sort of quantify it, just sort of try and see if they could measure the amount of this, of, you know, so the Dunning-Kruger effect, if you know very little, then you probably think that there's very little that you don't know. And if you know a lot, then you probably think there's a lot that you don't know. So there should be some sort of linear relationship. That was what the hypothesis was.
Yeah.
That the more you know, essentially, the more you realize that you don't know. So you're conscious of that. So they set out to test that. And this was over 30 years. My goodness me.
It's a long study. That's a really long study.
So what they did was basically do these large-scale studies in Europe, and I think about 5 of them overall. And essentially what they were sort of multi-choice type questions or true-false type questions. So just all about sort of fundamentally science sort of stuff. So some questions that they asked, for example, were, are electrons smaller than atoms? If you've got radioactive milk, can you drink it after boiling it? Is that going to make it safe? How do lasers work? Do they work by focusing sound waves, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera? Okay, so just these sorts of things. But the big difference in the questionnaire was that in terms of the multi-choice, you'd have A, B, C, D. E, don't know / not sure.
Interesting.
Okay. And with the yes, no, or true, false, third option, don't know, not sure. Okay. And so people were encouraged then to, you know, if they honestly didn't know or they weren't sure, to put down that particular option.
Yes.
And then what they were looking at is essentially sort of the number of don't knows versus the number of wrong answers. Okay. So, you know, if you get it wrong, you know, then you obviously didn't know or you weren't sure.
Yeah.
And so you should have answered
don't know, not sure,
you know. And so basically what they found, so they analyze all the results here and they're saying, okay, so the they're talking about this linear relationship, but they didn't find that. And what they found was that basically, going back to the sort of answering incorrectly, what that demonstrates is that you're overconfident.
Interesting.
That you're overconfident in your own ability, that you know, or how much you think you know, okay?
Yeah.
Where you really should have answered, don't know, not sure. Okay. Mm. And they found that the greatest sort of overconfidence was found with people who were sort of in the middle of the knowledge range, okay? And then everything tailed off as you got to the large knowledge range. You know, they were definitely not overconfident.
Interesting.
Okay, so the maximum amount of overconfidence were people who knew sort of about a median amount of stuff about science. And now they also tested them on their attitudes to science, you know, and sort of saying, you know, do you agree or disagree with the statement that we rely too much on science and not enough on faith, or scientists have too much power and they're wrecking the world, you know, those sorts of things. And now what they seemingly found is a correlation now between overconfidence and the attitudes towards science.
That makes so much sense.
So the people who are really, really confident in their own ability or their own amount of knowledge are also the ones who've got the, let's say, worst attitude to science.
I'm glad that it took a 30-year study and they can go, these are the results, but they also could have just gone on Facebook and then they would have been like, oh yeah, nice.
On any conspiracy page.
Yeah. Someone's auntie is out there talking about the COVID vaccine right now, like, yeah.
But, I mean, this leads to the big problem. What the hell are we doing here?
Mm.
All three of us.
Talking about science.
We are talking about science. We are imparting knowledge to everybody out there. Ooh. Are we making them more overconfident because they now think they know more than they do?
Self-fulfilling prophecies? Oh, no.
So, a very, very interesting study. And again, the cohort of people who were found to be the most overconfident are white males and sort of with an intermediate education.
I mean, you didn't have to tell us
that. Probably surprises nobody, yeah.
What? That's insane.
Who would have thunk that? Yeah.
So they're seeing it's like a bell chart almost.
Yes, basically, yes, yes. Yep.
That's very cool.
So, so the culmination of like 30 years of research, that's a big, big study, and that was just published in Nature Human Behavior.
Congratulations.
So if anyone wants to go and look that up.
Yeah, 100%. Yep. What's the last story here for us, Alan?
Salads.
Salads, yes.
Salads.
This story made me laugh out loud.
Now, if we are going to go traveling anywhere in space, we've obviously got to eat.
Yes.
And if we're going to go to Mars or somewhere like that, 9 months there, 9 months back, and then depending on the relative orientation of the Earth and Mars, then you might have to stay on Mars for quite a wee while before you come back and blah, blah, blah. So we are probably going to have to grow some food because we probably can't fit it all in the spacecraft. And so this was sort of deemed to, you know, not necessarily be a problem. They do it up in the International Space Station at the moment, so, you know, they can grow their own stuff up there, some veggies and this, that and the other. But University of Delaware researchers have now shown that if you start growing lettuces in microgravity, then they become more and more susceptible to salmonella. Now, you might think, okay, International Space Station or spacecraft or something, it's going to be clean as a whistle. No, it won't be. No, there's all sorts of bugs and everything, you know, because we're humans. So, you know, bugs travel with us and everything. And, you know, so we're never going to be totally free of those sorts of nasties. Now, what they found was that with lettuces in microgravity conditions, now, normally they sort of breathe, quote unquote, I guess, but they've got these little things called stomata, so little openings, okay? Yeah. And so in order to respire, then they open those. And when they sense danger, when they find sort of danger, like, you know, bugs and stuff like that in the vicinity, then they close them up so that your nasty bugs can't get inside and, you know, start reproducing and doing all those nasty things. However, what they found was that when you're growing these things in microgravity, and they were sort of simulating microgravity by having these things sort of on a spit, so just slowly rotating and growing these lettuces on the slowly rotating thing, so therefore they don't know where, so the plants lose their sense of direction, they don't know which way is up and which way is down, and they get all confused and their stomata stay open.
Okay, so, crazy. So
even in the presence of your nasty bugs and things, your salmonellas and, you know, all of those sorts of things. And so they've put out a warning basically saying, well, you know, this could be a great danger unless you're really, really, really careful with everything up in space under microgravity conditions. So
that's such a niche thing that, can you imagine being like, sorry, babe, got to go to work today. The stomata is staying open.
The stomata, wait for no man. Yeah, there you
go. That is insane. Got to go study if they're getting bugs. Like, that is.
Yeah, yeah.
So
you know, science, there's just so many things to science. Yeah. There just is. All these things that you'd never even think of.
And that's why I'm glad we get to do this every week, Alan. Opens my horizons.
And not next week, because next week is Waitangi Day.
True that. Yeah.
But then the week after that, we've got a big surprise.
Oh, a big surprise.
Ooh. Oh, and Sophia's let it out of the bag. There we go. Oh, dear.
Just turn off my mic.
None of you heard that out there. Anyway, yeah, next week, big announcement. 2 weeks. In 2 weeks, big announcement.
2 weeks, absolutely, yeah. Yes. So I will be back in 3 weeks, I guess. But
Enjoy your break.
Absolutely, shall do. Lots to do. Lots to do. Start of the year and all that. So
thank you, Alan.
Lectures written.
Thank you, science.
And thank you, MOTAT.
Right on.
Well, I didn't know that before. Dear Science, thanks to MOTAT, the museum inspiring the innovators of tomorrow.
That was a 95BFM podcast. To hear more, head to 95BFM.com/bcasts.